there such a thing as a miracle drug? Well, that's certainly how people are describing Ozempic, which is one of the brand names for semaglutide drugs. These were the ones that were developed to treat diabetes and are now being used by a very large number of people, in some places at least, for weight loss. But is the way we're being encouraged to think about this class of drugs healthy in itself? Dr. Emma Beckett is an adjunct senior lecturer in nutrition, dietetics and food innovation at the University of New South Wales. Emma, welcome to Life Matters.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. What are you hearing about people's experiences using Ozempic for weight loss and that kind of drug in terms of physical impacts first, I guess?
Yeah, it's a really mixed experience that people are reporting having. So some people are talking about how great it is to finally not feel hungry all the time and they feel like their hunger signals are normal like everyone else's. And then other people are talking about the nasty side effects that they get. And, you know, people have ended up in hospital with vomiting and diarrhea so bad. People have ended up with pancreatitis and those kinds of awful side effects. And then you're hearing from people who've been on it for quite a little while who are seeing the effects kind of wear off, and they're reaching that plateau of weight loss that we see with almost every kind of restrictive diet, and they're not losing the same kind of weight that they did at the start.
So why do we see that kind of variability in different kinds of bodies?
Because biology is complicated and humans aren't designed, and there's so much stuff that just happens, you know, by a random combination of biology that makes amazing humans who we are. And for me, that variability is something that would have been really great to talk about positively when we discovered how these drugs worked for appetite and weight loss. We could have taken a step back and said, oh, actually, the reason why these drugs work for some people is because we don't all have the same hunger signals. So we keep approaching this as, you know, everyone should be able to work just as hard as each other and lose the same amount of weight, and everyone should have the option or opportunity to get to the same healthy, in quotes, weight. And biologically speaking, not everyone does have that same opportunity. So we could have really recognized that when we discovered these weight loss drugs, but instead we went down the path of, you know, peer pressure and judgment and, you know, lose weight at all cost and, you know, putting weight back at the center of this conversation when we were doing such a good job at taking it towards health regardless of weight. And a lot of that's been undone in the last year.
That's really interesting perspective. What about the emotional side of things? Because I guess, you know, if we look at it through a lens of weight loss good, thin good, fat bad, then people go, well, it's an unalloyed benefit if it does work for you. But I understand that you're hearing more of a mixed bag of emotional impacts for people as well.
It's really difficult because a lot of people who are overweight don't see that as being a problem. They know it's not a moral failing and they don't see it as being a biological failing either. And so all of this, you know, sounding off about, you know, here's this miracle way to fix all you people, we'll all be normal weights in the future because we have these drugs now. A, it's not going to work biologically because these drugs won't work the same on all people. B, not everyone wants to choose it. And if you take a step back and think, how did we get to the point where we're declaring, you know, miracle drugs for weight loss as the next and greatest thing and talking about them all the time in the media as we are now? What about our society and what we think about fat people and fatness? What brought us here? And when you really stop and think about that, it is the fat phobia, because people aren't saying these drugs will be great, they'll make a whole bunch of people healthier. They're saying these drugs will be great, they'll make a whole bunch of people thinner. And we don't all have equal access and we don't all have equal opportunities and we don't all have equal biology. So let's just stop for a second and think about who we're hurting along the way to what we see as solutions and really think about how we're actually defining that problem to start with.
It's really interesting, isn't it? Because this class of drugs is really having quite a cultural moment. Dr. Emma Beckett, how much do you feel that's being driven by medicine and how much by culture? You mentioned the words diet culture before. I wonder if you could explain if that plays into this.
Yeah, so there's definitely been a crossover between cultural moments and medical discoveries here. And so when I talk about diet culture is the set of ideologies that society shares that says thinness is more important than any other aspect of health, and that striving for thinness should be done at sacrifice of other aspects of wellness and well-being, including happiness and psychological well-being, and sometimes including the rest of your physical well-being. And because we have that furor around thinness and diet culture, having medications that address weight are of interest to the general public. But then we slide into conversations about who should be allowed to take this drug and who deserves it. And people message me and they say, oh, well, I think proper fat people should be able to use it, but not people who just are a little bit fat. And like, where do we draw those lines? And, you know, who gets to decide who's proper fat? And what does proper fat mean in terms of being deserving of medical intervention or not? And so actually bringing these conversations, bringing people of different body sizes into these conversations and not just pathologizing and judging these outcomes would be a lot more beneficial in the long term if we're going to keep going down this path. Otherwise, it's just going to be this cycle of fat phobia and haves and have-nots and fat stigma. And we're just going to end up in this situation with a different type of drug when this one wears off or has side effects that people can't tolerate.
If you've just joined this conversation, you're hearing Dr. Emma Beckett, who's a food and nutrition scientist and an adjunct senior lecturer at the University of New South Wales. And we're looking at the idea of Ozempic and other semaglutide drugs as, in quotes, miracle cure for obesity. And Kate, you mentioned other drugs. Have we seen this kind of latching onto the idea of miracle cures before? And what happened to those drugs?
Yeah, so for weight loss drugs, we've definitely seen the idea of miracle cures before. And we definitely hear this in the weight loss space more than any other conditions, simply because of the diet culture and judgment that comes around body weight. And so we've had drugs that do things like block absorption of fats. And so you can eat the same foods, or it puts you off eating fats because you get the very negative side effects of oily stools when you take these products. We were told those would be the next big thing in weight loss, and we'd all be thin if we could take those. That didn't pan out because the side effects were so terrible and the results were not as good as anticipated. We've had stimulant drugs that have been spruiked as the best way to lose weight, you know, simply make your body burn more energy through stimulation. Obviously, those have very negative side effects. And then we've had, you know, the big medical interventions like the bypass surgeries, where you're tying off sections of people's stomachs or stapling stomachs so people physically can't eat as much food. And everyone I know who went through that lost a lot of weight early on, struggled with nourishment early on, and then eventually their body re-equilibrated back to their original weight. And so these solutions, you know, they're for some people, they're going to work, but for some people, they're going to be a false flag of hope.
This is fascinating too, to learn from some of your writing on the Conversation website, for example, that obesity can even coexist with malnutrition. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so we focus on weight so much and say, you know, this weight is a good one and this one is a bad one and these people are healthy and unhealthy. But we can be overweight and malnourished. So if we're not eating micronutrient dense foods, if we're just eating calorie dense foods, our obesity can be linked to malnourishment. But we can have the same thing where a slim person can be malnourished. We can also have the reverse, where someone who is overweight can be eating all of the right foods and be perfectly well nourished. And then, of course, we've got different fitnesses that we can apply on top of that. I've been very thin and I've been very overweight, and I was probably my fittest at my highest weight point and doing more physical activity and bigger and stronger physical activity. And so instead of looking at the weight and going, let's change those weight at all cost, at the expense of perhaps nourishment and physical activity, let's look at how we can work with people in all body sizes to make better choices for food and nutrition and to make better choices for physical activity that fit into their context and their lives. So instead of alienating people and going, nope, not your way, let's say, what would work best for each individual person rather than keeping trying to apply these blanket miracle cures, which are very marketable but don't necessarily work for everyone.
It's really fascinating to unpick some of the lenses that people are looking at this through when you start to see a new drug come on the market. We talked a little bit about the way it plays into pre-existing cultural attitudes around diet culture and the idea that, overweight has moral implications and that all bodies work the same and that therefore should, in inverted commas, be doing particular things. Kate, what happens when a larger person who has represented body positivity uses one of these kinds of drugs? I'm thinking of the Oprah effect. Tell us what happened there.
Yeah, so the Oprah effect is really difficult because Oprah has been very public for her career about her struggles with weight and her quest for weight loss. And she has shared a lot of her weight loss journeys and a lot of people have followed her weight loss journeys. And so people who have felt like they've been sharing that struggle along beside her have felt betrayed by the now open declaration of using these medications. And the challenge here is that when we see people like Oprah lose weight on each of these individual diets that she's chosen, every time a diet works, we all go, as the viewing public, we all go, that works, we'll do that too. And then we see Oprah gain weight again. And we don't go, oh, actually, that diet has failed Oprah. We go, oh, Oprah failed on that diet. And then we think the same thing when we do it. We never blame the diets. We always blame us. We always have not lived up to the potential. And so the idea, you know, I'm definitely not saying Oprah should be allowed to take weight loss drugs if that's what she chooses to do. And if I'm sure she has all of the medical consultations, all of the nutritionists, everyone who can help her make sure she's doing this in the healthiest possible way. But we don't all have the resources and the access to experts that people like Oprah do have. And so what she does will have a trickle-down effect to what other people do or what other people feel judged or inadequate for not being able to do. And, you know, really thinking about that big picture rather than just going miracle drug really would get us, it's a lot harder of a conversation, but it would get us a lot further into actually trying to help people who you know, we claim these drugs are designed for.
There's that idea too, isn't there, that using the drugs is, in inverted commas, cheating because there's an approved way and not approved ways to lose weight.
This is one of the absolutely most insane things about this debate is that we're telling people that they need to lose weight for health, but then when they choose these drugs to do that, we tell them that they're cheating and they're not doing it the right way or the hard way. But the very fact that these drugs work is because controlling an appetite is not about willpower alone. There are so many hormones that are involved in controlling our appetite and controlling our weight. And the very reason that these drugs work is that some people find that a lot harder and much different experience to other people. And so reflecting on that, and you know, fat people just can't win either way. We're damned if we do and we're damned if we don't. And we really want to be in a situation where we can respect different choices for different people so that everyone can have the best possible shot at health and happiness, not just people who have certain options or certain situations.
A text has popped in. I am an obese 34-year-old with polycystic ovaries and diabetes. I've tried all diets and drugs, and one thing I've learned is we need to focus on the hormone imbalance that's preventing the weight loss rather than the fast fix. This conversation is wonderful for me. Thank you, doctor, they say. But this one too from Samantha in Moorabbin. What about the health risks involved with being overweight, like heart, cancer, etc., even if you exercise and eat healthy? And I guess, Emma, there's the argument that overweight can put stress on the healthcare system more broadly too. How would you respond to those arguments?
Yeah, so there's a couple of things there. So we need to remember that it's not just weight that puts stress onto the health system. Malnourishment will also put stress onto the health system. So again, if we can address the malnourishment and in cases where that is linked to the weight, then the weight changes will follow. We also know that a lot of the problems that come from weight being linked to health can't be extracted from the other exposures that relate to higher weight. So if you're of a higher weight because of socioeconomic pressures, you know, you can't afford the same healthy food as richer people, we use maths and statistics to kind of separate those effects out, but you can't ever completely. And so we have things like, you know, the actual foods people are eating, the nourishment, we have the socioeconomic impacts, we have the situational impacts. All of those contribute to the poorer health outcomes for overweight and obese people.
Emma, we'll have to leave it there, but it's been such a fascinating conversation. Thanks so much for joining us on Life Matters today.
All right. I look forward to a society designed better for fat people to thrive as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Edmund Beckett is a food and nutrition scientist and an adjunct senior lecturer at the University of New South Wales.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.